Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As sands go through the hourglass, wait, that was the script for a national soap opera. The current national soap opera is still sliding that sand through the hourglass, and the outcome should be compromise. But compromise on whose ground and answering which urgency? Jobs? Growth? A country in which the national mood is an ugly mood? This hour on Point, decoding the debt deal and checking the national pulse. You can join the conversation. Has the system worked? Is our economy better off with this compromise? Or is this, as a member of the National Black Caucus called it, a sugar-coated Satan sandwich? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. And joining me now from Washington is Bob Cusack. He's the managing editor of The Hill newspaper. Bob Cusack, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me on.
Also joining me from Washington is Christina Bellantoni. She's the associate politics editor at CQ Roll Call. Christina, welcome back.
Hi, thanks, Jackie.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Jackie, Bob, and Christina.
Well, who would like to take a crack at getting everybody up to the minute and also on the same page? Maybe Bob Cusack, round up what happened last night and where we're going today.
Well, a lot of activity over the weekend and last night throughout the day. It was kind of a waiting game in the Senate, and that's where a lot of the action was. Senator Reid and Mitch McConnell were working to get a deal. There was a lot of sniping throughout the weekend, but finally they were able to unveil a deal. And that means that basically this is not going to be a bill that's going to be hard to move in the Senate, because if you have Reid and you have McConnell, then you're likely going to get 60. Are there critics of it? Of course, in the Senate. But the real action, I think, is going to be in the House, because the House Democrats are very upset still with President Obama on the tax cut deal he struck in late 2010. And they are not happy about this deal either. And remember, there are going to be defections on the Republican side, and I think there's going to be far more defections on the Republican side than there was on the Boehner bill last week. 22 Republicans voted no. Without a doubt, this bill will need Democrats on it, and will need Republicans on it, or it will not pass the House.
Which is pretty much what President Obama has been saying. What's your take on this, Christina Bellantoni?
Well, I think it's a little early to know how there's going to be any sort of political fallout from this. I mean, what you're setting up is this massive showdown in the fall. Again, if you remember what happened over the extending the Bush tax cuts last fall, you're going to see basically a repeat of that in an even worse fashion as the election's all that much closer and President Obama's reelection is on the line. I think that this is going to get really ugly before it gets better.
Let's just refresh. Here is Senator Harry Reid speaking on the Senate floor last night, saying that neither side will be totally happy with the compromise.
I know this agreement won't make every Republican happy. It certainly won't make every Democrat happy either. But both parties gave more ground than they wanted to, and neither side got as much as it had hoped.
And here is Republican Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor Sunday about how the compromise reduces how much money the government spends.
I think I can say with a high degree of confidence that there is now a framework to review that will ensure significant cuts in Washington spending. And we can assure the American people tonight that the United States of America will not, for the first time in our history, default on its obligations.
You know, I listen to this and I think that's the stentorian tone that one expects from the nation's lawmakers. We really haven't been seeing that. Today, if there is not a deal in Congress, the tone is going to change, obviously, dramatically.
Yeah, well, sorry, the markets are definitely, I think, going to play a big role, too, of what's going to happen from this point on. The markets are happy that a deal was reached, but if they have trouble actually getting the votes, and there's going to be a struggle, then that's going to play an important factor. We saw that in the TARP bill in 2008 after the initial bill failed on the House floor and the market tanked 800 points.
Jack Beattie, is this really bipartisanship, and is this a deal that the American people are happy with?
Well, we don't know about the American people at this point. The fallout from that will take some weeks, I think. Is it a bipartisan bill? Well, it looks like it. But let's look at it from the president's point of view. He didn't get the clean debt ceiling that he wanted. That was the first position. He didn't get the balanced approach to deficit reduction, taxes, spending. He didn't get that. He did get a clean bill until the end of the 2012 election. He wanted that. And he did, at this iteration at least, protect entitlement. So he got something. He lost something. But larger than in a larger perspective, he lost everything, I think. I think there's an emerging critique of the president that he has essentially ceded the agenda to the Tea Party. There's an old maxim in politics. He who, you know, says what politics is about rules. Well, the Tea Party has said what politics is about. In the face of polls showing that relatively small percentage of Americans think deficit reduction and the debt are our outstanding economic problem. Far more think the economy and jobs. In the face of that, they have commanded the agenda and really have shown that the president can be effectively taken hostage. And that's not a sign of presidential leadership, I think.
Well, you know, I'm just thinking anyone about some of the liberal commentary that we've seen this morning. It was mentioned on Morning Edition. Paul Krugman of the New York Times, a columnist, called it a surrender by President Obama. Robert Reich, the former Labor Secretary, no happier, writing for and that was culled from the Huffington Post. Just looking at what some of his liberal base is saying, and it reminded me of being on the Mall at the inaugural, Barack Obama's historic inaugural, when you had over a million people cheering. And I thought, what would that million people, a lot of whom were base, some of whom were curious onlookers and moderates, be saying today? I don't think they'd be nearly so happy.
No, and that's, I think, one risk, one political risk for the president, the depressed base. Will people simply feel so dispirited by this and by the two other compromises, or as Paul Krugman would say, surrenders this year to the Republicans, that they won't turn out in the same number or they won't manifest the same enthusiasm? And second, will the center, the people he's after, the independents, will they simply be so disillusioned with government from this spectacle of the last weeks that they will vote again? They will vote for the party that says government can't do anything right. Essentially, this kind of thing doesn't hurt Republicans when government is dysfunctional. It hurts Democrats. They're the ones who believe in government. And when you have spectacles like this, they suffer.
Let's get some listeners in here. Paul is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Paul.
Thanks, Jackie, and thanks for taking my call. My question to your panelists is, is there anyone out there who thinks that perhaps President Obama worked this one effectively by taking less than he wanted now so that when the actual presidential election comes around next year, he'll be able to get reelected because America absolutely won't take more of this, and he'll be able to really use his bully pulpit to say that we need new revenue because we gave on the cuts now, so there absolutely is no other choice in the future except to go after the higher taxpayers in the next election?
Okay, thank you, Paul. Christina?
Well, I was just going to point out that it's easy to talk about what Obama's position is and how this could affect him in the center with independents or with the left, but when you think about, there will be a Republican candidate by the time voters go to the polls in 2012, and that person is probably going to be advocating for what Obama fought against. You know, this potentially, you know, really, really, really big, big cuts that were tied to entitlement programs. And so I think that when you look at what voters will be deciding then, it's a very, very different question, and that's why it's so early. But I do think that the caller has an excellent point of just looking at there's a lot of broad consequences here.
Well, I also am curious as to what you would think about where the Republican candidates have been on this. I mean, they've been pretty quiet apart from Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, and that's where you've definitely heard the critique of Mitt Romney from his rivals. But they're going to have to weigh in, but they also have the luxury, other than Bachmann and Representative Ron Paul from Texas, they have the luxury of not having to take a vote on this. And President Obama enjoyed that luxury in 2008, where he could demagogue on an issue that he hadn't had to vote on, and that was the Iraq War. And I think that it's very hard to come in and try to govern when you actually have to take positions on things. So these Republican candidates can sort of play around with it and talk about what they would have done. It's all very hypothetical, and they don't have to actually cast a vote.
Do you think that the president has used the bully pulpit effectively, Jack?
Well, I think the evidence is just there that he hasn't. I mean, effectively, he could have fought the Republicans on this priority. He could have said, look, folks, our main priority is growth, get the economy going, get people back to work. He didn't. He ceded the ground. He essentially folded on the idea of more stimulus, I guess recognizing political reality. You have to recognize that. But I can imagine the White House thought, well, we'll be the adults. We'll show we're willing to compromise. We'll, you know, do well by just being steady and rational. Well, he's at 40% approval now in the Gallup poll. I mean, it seems to me that's the kind of referendum the public didn't think he was showing enough leadership.
I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about the so-called Grand Compromise over the debt ceiling to allow the country to borrow more money and avoid a potentially catastrophic default. We're joined by Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill newspaper, and Christina Bellantoni. She's the associate politics editor at CQ Roll Call. They're joining us from Washington. Also with us from Hanover, the Dartmouth College studio, is Jack Beattie, our on-point news analyst. Let's take a call. David is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to On Point, David.
Jackie, thank you for taking my call. I just had two quick points. I am just so upset that so many commentators are pointing the finger at Obama for caving on this issue. I liken it to political terrorism. These Tea Partiers, I mean, just it's a perfect storm where the whole issue of deficit reduction is tied to the debt limit. Had that not been a factor, I think a more reasoned compromise could have been worked out. But these Tea Partiers have just, I mean, certainly they hijacked the whole agenda. But, I mean, what else could Obama have done? We can't go into default. He realized that. The consequences were just too grave. So, again, I'm just so upset that so many people are faulting him. He tried his best with the Gang of Six to get a reasoned, balanced approach. But these people are just like political terrorists, in my opinion.
Thank you for that comment, David. Bob Cusack, do you think there's something else the president could have done?
Well, some Democrats say he could have invoked the 14th Amendment. We had Jim Clyburn, a member of the Democratic leadership team, suggesting that should be a possibility, that the president needs to look at that. Former President Bill Clinton also said that. So a lot of liberals are saying he had other options. But when you really look at it, the nation is definitely in danger of a downgrade with the credit rating agencies. Even if this bill passes today or this week, that is the main concern. You talk to people on Wall Street. So they may not be enamored with this deal because critics will say it once again kicks the can down the road, does make some cuts, but the big cuts would not come later with another yet commission that will look at entitlement reform and tax loopholes, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, we will be looking at some of the economics with an expert a little bit later in this hour. But just for the moment, how well do you think the Tea Party played its hand?
Oh, I think it's played its hand pretty strongly. It derailed John Boehner's first bill last week before he revised it. Now, he passed cut, cap, and balance. That was something that the Tea Party, by and large, liked. But then a more centrist proposal that he tried to get through the House. The House majority usually rams things home very easily. Maybe they can afford some defections here and there, but they couldn't afford all the defections that were coming in. They had to backtrack, and that was largely in part because of the Tea Party. I talked to a member of Congress. He said he loved the Tea Party's enthusiasm in helping Republicans win the House. But then when you get into legislating, he said it's very frustrating because they don't realize the politics of it, that they will actually weaken the GOP's hand, and they did so last week by derailing that initial bill.
Christina, I'm remembering when the health care bill came up and a lot of Republicans held out slips of paper over the railings around the Capitol saying, kill the bill, and really welcomed the Tea Party's role when it came to the debate about the health care bill. Now, do you think that there's a sort of a chastened feeling, or do you think that the emboldened Tea Party will spell future problems?
Definitely. I think there's some future problems ahead, you know, in this fight that we mentioned earlier in the program about what ends up happening with this super commission that they're setting up that will look at potential tax increases in the fall. But you've also got an interesting dynamic here because the Tea Party, they're not really big fans of John Boehner's, and they do look at him as compromising here. You're still seeing people with opposition to this deal, you know, on the conservative side of the party. But it's not as if Eric Cantor, who's the most likely candidate, let's just say, I don't think this would happen, but let's just say John Boehner was ousted and he was no longer speaker. Eric Cantor would sort of rise up in his place. They're not going to love him either. He's potentially a little bit more conservative, but being in that role as a party leader, you've got to cut deals. And that's where the Tea Party says, no, absolutely not. We will just hold a line, say no, don't cut any deals, don't compromise with Obama, let's defeat him. And I think that that really forges a big problem for leadership, regardless of who holds the gavel. And beyond that, it's interesting which members get pegged with the Tea Party label. I saw a photo the other day of a couple members, including Sean Duffy, and it said, you know, Tea Partiers say such and such. Sean Duffy is very much an establishment Republican freshman from Wisconsin, and he's going to do what leadership tells him, even though he's going to claim that sort of Tea Party banner when it's convenient.
Jack Beatty, the entire debate, though, has certainly moved to the right, hasn't it?
Yes. I mean, there's just no question about it. You asked about, has the Tea Party played their cards well? You just couldn't imagine them playing them any better. Their agenda rules. You know, David, I think, makes a good point, the caller, that the president didn't – what choice did the president have? They were holding the economy hostage. They seem willing to – you know, risk the credit rating of the United States to get their way. He had to give way. Well, I guess the counterargument is, were those, in fact, his only cards? I mean, people have said all along that suppose in December he had made a condition of continuing the full Bush tax cuts, that the Republicans would agree to raise the debt ceiling. Was that a possible deal? Well, at the time when he was asked about that, he said, of course they will. That's what people do. That's the responsible thing to do. That was naive of the president. And, you know, leaders shouldn't be naive about political realities. He was.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Carl is calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Carl.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for having me on. The general question is, but did Obama do the right thing? I think he did. I don't think he had another choice. I think he was right to portray the Tea Party as intransigent and unwilling to compromise and dangerous, and that was holding the economy hostage. But you can't do that and then turn around and refuse to threaten to veto a bill, even if you don't like it, because then you'd be doing exactly the same thing.
For anyone, have we seen this kind of we're hearing the word intransigence a lot. This party is electorally in the minority, and yet this kind of intransigence is, have we seen it before, Jack?
Oh, gee, well, according to a computer program called Denominate, Bob knows more about it than I do, there's a ranking ideologically of Congress and over the whole of American history. Recently, this program found that the median House voter is now more as conservative as any time in American history. And they have found that politics is more polarized than it has been probably in the 20th century, although I'm not sure about that. Polarized meaning that the gap between the Democrats and the Republicans is just so much wider on so many more issues. So I guess the answer is we've never seen anything quite like that, or at least not in our lifetimes.
Michael is calling from Charleston, South Carolina. Michael, you're on Point.
I'm just calling. I'm just very frustrated with our current situation. The debt's been risen up since Bush's debt, and it's you know, $3 trillion, $4 trillion, depends who you talk to, that the current president has added to it, and we're in this mess. And he says, is this the deal I would have preferred? No. Well, what was his deal? He never showed us a deal. He hasn't been leading in anything, the healthcare issue, for instance. He lets others lead, or if something doesn't go right, he'll blame Bush or someone else for it. And our country's got the soaring debt problem. Then we have unemployment, especially in the black community. It's just atrocious. And in my state, we have Boeing Corporation, a private company that set up a business to provide jobs, and then the Justice Department's come in with the NLRB and is suing them over their hiring procedures and their right to hire people here. And, you know, if he's really for jobs and for the economy growth, why is he fighting a private company that's hiring people?
I'm just curious, Michael, you are calling from South Carolina. What do you think about your legislators' position in Congress on the deal?
I think if we don't do what they want to do, our legislators, in terms of balancing the budget, cut cap and balance, our country will go into bankruptcy. It might not be in 2 years, it might not be in five, but in 10 years, we'll be like Greece. So what they're doing is taking a very strong stance. Many people aren't for it, but in reality, what they're doing is what needs to be done.
Okay, so they have your support. Thank you. Thank you for that, Michael. Let's go now to Los Angeles. We are speaking with Richard Green. He's a professor at the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. Richard Green, welcome to On Point.
My pleasure, Jackie.
Tell us, we are thinking today not only about this deal and whether or not it will pass, but where it leaves everything from the markets to bond ratings to transportation, mortgage finance. A lot of economic issues are going to be affected by this. Whatever happens.
Yes, that's correct. And if a deal gets passed, it's almost certainly the case that bond markets will continue to be calm, and financial markets in the short term at least will be happy, breathe a sigh of relief, and do a little better.
Well, one estimation of this is that the president really didn't have any choice if certain parties, the Tea Party, were not going to compromise and, this is one interpretation of it, risk the economy. The president had to go along with this to avert going into default. It looks like we will avert going into default. But what comes to your mind that is most in play as a result, even of this kind of intense, I called it earlier, a soap opera on Capitol Hill?
Well, the first thing is it's not entirely clear that the president didn't have other cards available to play. Brad DeLong said on his blog this morning, a guy who figured out how going to war in Libya is not going to war, presumably had lawyers who were clever enough to at least extend this for a while longer than we did. So, again, he clearly chose not to play some cards that he might have played. From the standpoint of the short run, I think the deal is worrisome because if you look at the GDP numbers that came out last Friday, they were really bad.
Anemic.
I would say worse than that because there were downward revisions of past year's GDP. And where we are is we still haven't returned to the peak where we were before this recession started. And if you look at those GDP numbers, an awful lot of the reason for that is because of reductions in government spending, if you look at all levels, state, local, as well as federal. And in fact, the number of government workers is down about 500,000 from where it was a few years ago. And so that's putting a drag on the economy. So a deal that basically front-loads spending cuts in the face of pretty bad economic times is one that I'm kind of mystified about. At the same time, it still exempts, as best I could tell reading this deal, Social Security and most of Medicare from cuts in the out years. If you look at the automatic triggers, those are the things that are spared. And in terms of getting fiscal balance in the out years, those are the things, in particular Medicare, that we have to deal with. So I'm a little mystified at all of this.
All right, let's take another call. Carl is calling from Ithaca, New York. Welcome to On Point, Carl.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd like to address this issue of Obama's use of the bully pulpit, hoping if he does get reelected, he will use it. But I think he missed opportunities from very early on. During this whole health care debate, He was called socialist, this and that. I mean, these words get thrown around in a horrible way, and I think he could have had some teaching moments. I think this country did pretty well when we used socialism and capitalism. I think he could have sort of reinformed the public about the last Gilded Age in the 19th century and, you know, the regulations and unionism, which came as a result of that. And I think most Americans have forgotten. And this is what's going on now. Bush started a return to the Gilded Age. I think he could have informed people about this when the BP oil crisis had, which, by the way, the Massey Energy mine disaster, which killed 29 people, got knocked right off the radar.
Okay.
And actually, both things could be connected.
All right. Thank you, Carl. Let's take another call. Gordon is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome to On Point, Gordon.
Hi, Jackie and Jack. I guess my feeling is, as, and I'm not a Tea Party supporter, but I think everyone's angry. They're going to say they're going to vote everyone out. But I look at other parliaments around the world, and we need a legitimate third party. If you think, you know, independent, whatever we call it, if we could elect just enough people in the House and Senate where nobody had a true majority, it would make these guys do some realistic compromise rather than just taking a stance that's the direct opposite of the other party. I mean, I don't think it matters who is in there. I think the whole system has just polarized everyone, and there needs to be another party where there is no true majority without compromise.
Thank you, Gordon. Christina, have you been hearing that? Right now, you're in the maw of, you know, the parties that we do have. I mean, is that really an alternative?
I think every year you get people sort of agitating for a different system, and it's all kinds of, you know, campaign finance reform, all of these things. But it is really the system where the money makes it happen, and that is the two major parties. And I think that that makes it really difficult for the average everyday American who is just watching a broken Washington. You know, the NBC special Inside Congress that aired over the weekend, Brian Williams kept asking that question, is Washington broken? And I think that's really what voters feel. They continue to tell that to pollsters, and every candidate comes along promising to change it. So, yeah, of course people are fed up and looking for something different.
Well, in many ways, the Tea Party is functioning as a third party, but, of course, within the established party.
Exactly.
Well, we are discussing the compromise on the debt crisis in Washington, and you can join the conversation. What have we learned from the debt standoff, and are we any better for it? We have been joined by Bob Cusack. Stay with us, Bob. He's the managing editor of The Hill newspaper in Washington. Christina Bellantoni is the associate politics editor at CQ Roll Call. Richard Green joined us from the University of Southern California School of Policy Planning and Development and the Marshall School of Business. Thank you very much for being with us, Richard Green.
You're welcome.
This is On Point. I'm Jackie Leiden, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking today about the compromise between Republicans and Democrats over raising the nation's borrowing authority, allowing Washington to go deeper into debt, averting a national default. Joining us this hour from Washington is Christina Bellantoni, the associate politics editor at CQ Roll Call, and Bob Cusack, the managing editor of The Hill newspaper. Also joining us is On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. He's with us from Dartmouth Studio in Hanover, New Hampshire. Here's a web comment we do call out for them, so let's take some from our website, onpointradio.org. Pissel writes, another disappointment for all who want more consideration for the poor and working people of America. Obama, from day one, has failed to follow through on his promises and caves at every turn. Prosecution of those who lied us into Iraq, shutting Guantanamo, eliminating tax breaks for the super wealthy, pushing Israel towards an agreement, and the list goes on. I've lost hope for this president after so much excitement after the election. For me, it's a sad day for our country, and I do apologize if I've mispronounce that name. I don't have a guide here. William writes, it would have been better to freeze spending in most programs at 2008 levels for the next 10 years. So a couple comments that have come in from the website. Let's take a call from a listener. John is calling from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Hello, John. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jesse. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to say I think a lot of the problems are a result of the election that took place. And, you know, people that don't like the way that it's going or the direction that we've moved towards are partly responsible for not getting out and voting. in the midterms, and that includes myself. And I think that if you want it to change, you're just going to have to do that. They're only responding to the percentage of people that actually got out and vote, and that voted, and that was the Tea Party, and they organized. And that's a big problem with our party, I think, or the one that I support, is that we can complain all day long on blogs. We can, you know, get upset about the situation. We can blame the president. But at the end of the day, politicians are going to react to the people that are voting. And, you know, if you look at the polls, I would be shocked to see if there wasn't a high percentage of independents and conservatives that voted and a very low percentage of progressives that did not. And that could be because they were disappointed about the way that things were going and they chose to sit home, which is what I did. But that's really not going to solve the problem. And that's not a retaliation to the argument that, you know, people are going to swing it the other way because of the way things are going, because there was never an effort in the first place.
Okay, thank you, John. Thank you. Bob Cusack with the Hill newspaper, what do you think about the next election? There was a comment I saw by political analyst, a professor, an academic in USA Today this morning that said if the last election was a sea change, the next one is also going to be of hurricane force. But we are still over a year away from that. And I just wonder if that's something you're even really thinking about today.
Well, it remains to be seen. We've had three wave elections, two good for Democrats, and, of course, the last one very good for Republicans. And that gives House Democrats who want to win back the House some hope that they could win back the lower chamber. As far as the president, I mean, then it comes down to what, you know, the age-old argument of, do you need to fire up your base or do you need to court independence? So one thing that the White House is closely monitoring is whether they'll get a primary challenge. Ralph Nader wants President Obama to have a primary challenge, as does Senator Bernie Sanders, who's not happy with the White House and the policies it's been pursuing. So, you know, will there be a huge hurricane in 2012 that'll swing one way or the other, or maybe knock out both Republicans and Democrats? We'll see. But usually when big waves come, they come for one party and not the other. And usually there's, even though there's a lot of speculation about an anti-incumbent kind of mood on both sides of the aisle, it usually swings one way or the other.
Stanley Greenberg, the Democratic pollster, had an interesting piece in this weekend's New York Times when he said that from his reading, people agree with much of what the Democratic Party says, but they don't necessarily believe that Democrats are going to do what they say. And it reminded me of some of the comments that have come in this morning and over the website.
Indeed. I mean, that's the frustration that Democrats have had. I mean, they in 2009, they had everything. They had the Senate, they had the House, they had the White House. Then later on, after Al Franken won, they had 60 Senate votes in the Senate. And they got health care through, but it was such a struggle. And a lot of other things that were on the agenda, including immigration reform, didn't get done. And then, of course, 2010 pushed the House back to the Republicans, and now Senate Republicans are very confident that they're going to pick up 3 to 4 or 5 seats and that they'll win control of the Senate. So if you talk to Republicans, they think they're in very good shape congressionally, that they'll keep the House, they could win the Senate, and of course there's the White House. Even if you talk to congressional Republicans privately, a lot of them don't think that any of the candidates out there right now can beat President Obama, but that a lot of it depends on the unemployment rate in November 2012.
Let's take another call. Sandra is calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Sandra.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say I am a registered Republican. I live in Massachusetts. We're kind of rare around here, but I am just wanted to say that I'm totally disgusted with both parties. I feel that the Republicans have gone way too far to the right. I think we need to rail in some of these companies that are shipping jobs overseas. There was an article in the Globe last week saying that Boston Scientific was going to lay off 2,500 people, but yet hire 1,000 people in China. And I really think that most Americans feel that these companies who ship their jobs and their money offshore should be taxed. We need jobs here. I've been unemployed for about 9 months, And, you know, I'm just disgusted with both parties. I think it's terrible that they have come so close in the 11th hour to getting some kind of resolution. I really think both parties are to be, you know, abhorred, and, you know, something has to be done. Maybe there are caller suggested another party coming to, and I don't think the Tea Partiers are there. Some of them are too far to the right. So I don't know.
Well, thank you, Sandra. Thank you for that point. What about unemployment? It is certainly not over 9%. Jack, we are at just an abysmal picture when it comes to unemployment, and it does seem remarkable that that is not further front and center where the fulcrum of this is. But it isn't, even though the White House says it's getting to that, or that it is.
Yes, they're going to give it lip service. They're going to talk about jobs programs. There will be no jobs program, however. The Republican Congress wouldn't pass it. The president is going to try to get his cut in Social Security taxes extended. That might have some stimulative effect. But, you know, there's a real threat, and this was pointed out by John Maynard Keynes in the 30s, that a capitalist economy can reach equilibrium at a high level of unemployment. I mean, after all, our companies are not hurting. They are profitable. They're just not investing it, or they're spending it, as Sandra said, abroad. They're doing fine, big business. It is small business. It's the retail establishments. It's people who depend upon the consumer goods who are hurting. But the big boys aren't. They can go on with this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having chronic unemployment, what does that do after all? Well, if I may, on public radio, quote Karl Marx, it creates what he calls a reserve army of the unemployed, who are always out there bidding down the wages of the employed. It's a great way to keep people from asking for more money. They know they can be replaced tomorrow. So there's a regressive, socially regressive function to unemployment in an economy like ours. And the chance and the danger of us plateauing at a high level of unemployment with nothing to break it, I think is very real.
You know, you're not alone in that thought, Jack. I was reading Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois had said that he thinks that this is, you know, the end of Keynesian economics. Obviously, we will have to see. But an interesting point. Let's take another call here. Steve is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome to On Point, Steve.
Why is everybody assuming that the Tea Party is there in perpetuity? These folks have to go back and face their constituents in 15 months. 15 months is an epic in politics. So the notion that they're all going to get reelected, I think maybe they've shot their wad. I think Obama once again has done a great rope-a-dope with them. Their own constituents, as somebody pointed out the other night, are on Social Security. They're on Medicare. They are probably more concerned about jobs than they are this issue of the debt ceiling. And these folks now have to go back, having read their tea leaves the last time that people voted them in for the debt ceiling, and go back and face their constituents that this is what they did. And how good was it really at the end of the day?
Well, Steve, did you hear the caller from South Carolina who supported his lawmakers and will continue to do so? And the Tea Party is very strong there. I mean, what do you think about that, Christina? Do you think there's a political price to pay for people who are Tea Party members and who are lawmakers?
I think some are. I mean, when you have a wave election, you have a lot of people that win that had no business of winning. And that's one reason why a lot of people were swept out in the 2010 elections that were Democrats who won in the 2006 wave elections. So if there somehow is a wave, or if Barack Obama manages to win re-election and, you know, the other Democrats are boosted with him being on the ballot, yeah, some of these Tea Party members are going to lose. But don't forget, there's so much that goes into this. You've got redistricting, where Republicans control so much of that process and can really secure a lot of these newly Republican seats. You've got, you know, all kinds of factors that happen on the ground, and obviously personal issues that come up. So there's just so much more time to know. I don't think those numbers are going to change all that much. I think it will be very difficult for the Democrats to win back control of Congress.
Jan is calling from Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to On Point, Jan.
Hi, Jackie. I'm you know, in reliving what has happened over the past few days, I think the public needs to be educated on how this came to be. And I think, you know, understanding Lee Atwater, the mentor of Karl Rove, maybe people renting not the horror movie but the documentary, The Boogeyman.
The late Republican strategist Lee Atwater.
Yes. This is just out of the playbook, and it's almost scary because it's all about winning. And I would encourage people to educate themselves on that, because as I watched this, I just saw it replaying and replaying and replaying. I'm a Democrat. I used to call myself a middle-of-the-roader, but I tell people now they really move the road.
Thank you. Thank you for that point, Jan. Anybody, Bob, perhaps, when it comes to thinking about what Christina just said about, you know, this perhaps not really changing the political dimensions very much because of redistricting, and Jack's point about a sort of large and permanent or semi-permanent class of unemployed people, are we changing, do you think, and this is a big question, and I know, but you're the managing editor at the Hill newspaper, are we changing socially as a society when it comes to wealth and the distribution of that wealth?
I think so. I mean, I think over the last several years, and the voters have spoken, that they've been very impatient. I mean, the electorate is angry. If you look back to 2004, if you don't count the Texas redistricting that was going on at the time, four incumbents, including the Senate and the House, four incumbents lost. And since that time, we've seen wave after wave after wave. And that means that people are not happy, so that they have looked at their personal situation and they don't like what they see. And that's what the Republican playbook is going to be come November 2012. They're going to use the Reagan line, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And I think it's going to be fascinating. But when you look at these unemployment numbers and projections of them, they're not going to be going down anytime soon. So we are in this situation of an ailing economy that's not going to be getting better, and real concern that's going to get worse before it gets better. And I think that is the change political dynamic. And as far as the Tea Party fading away, some people thought that the Tea Party would fade away after 2010. Well, it's going to be certainly going strong up until 2012. If a Republican wins, then there may not be the incentive for the Tea Party to be as strong. But I think this Tea Party force is going to be around. Sure, Tea Party lawmakers are going to lose, some of them in 2012. But there are also some senators who are around for 6 years, including Senator Mike Lee and others in the upper chamber that are going to be around for quite some time.
We have time for just one more call, if you keep it quick. Bill is calling from Northborough, Massachusetts. Welcome to On Point, Bill.
Thank you. It would have been interesting to find out how the lady, the one who was disgusted with both parties, had voted in the last election. However, the point I'm going to make is I'm not voting for Obama. I am hoping that the Democrats have a primary and have a primary challenge. If it turns out that he's the candidate, I'll go to the polls, I'll vote for my senator, I'll vote for my congressman, and if Obama's the candidate, I'm simply leaving that slot blank. I have absolutely had it. This is a man with no guts whatsoever. And he could change his bread and wine into his own body and blood, and I'm still not going to vote for him.
But I gather you did last time, Bill.
I did the last time with a tiny bit of reluctance on an issue that doesn't bother anyone but me. He voted for the Patriot Act, and in spite of that, I voted for him.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for your comment. I do think that in some ways you could say that it's you know, the whole speed of the political calendar seems to be getting faster and faster every year. But I'm not a reporter who has ever consistently covered politics the way that some of my colleagues have. What do you think, Bob and Christina? Is it, or is it just my impression? Because this to me seems to me to be setting the stage completely for 2012.
Yeah, I mean, I think more and more there's the constant election cycle where in traditionally in even number years, legislation on Capitol Hill doesn't move as much. But now that is seeping into the odd year and the fundraising pressures on members of Congress. A few of them like to raise money, but a very, very few. And most of them are very frustrated that they're constantly raising money, and that is playing a big role in today's politics.
Well, I want to thank everybody. Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Christina.
Thank you.
And Jack, of course, always a pleasure.
Thank you.
And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website at onpointradio.org and follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. This is On Point, and I'm Jackie Leiden in for Tom Ashbrook.